The weary hunter was led by the untirable Rough Tauntus to a deep cavern on the same level as that of the archetypes. Possibly, it was a kind of annex to the latter. At any rate, the ground was much firmer there, even though the air was murkier. And Ralibar Vuz might have recovered a little of his customary aplomb if it had not been for the ungodly and disgusting creatures which he soon began to meet. There were things which he could liken only to monstrous one-legged toads and immense myriad-tailed worms and miscreated lizards. They came flopping or crawling through the gloom in a ceaseless procession, and there was no end to the loathsome morphologic variations which they displayed. Unlike the archetypes, they were formed of all too solid matter, and Ralibar Vuz was both fatigued and nauseated by the constant necessity of kicking them away from his shins. He was somewhat relieved to find, however, that these wretched abortions became steadily smaller as he continued his advance. The dusk about him thickened with hot, evil steam that left an oozy deposit on his armor and bare face and hands. With every breath, he inhaled an odor noisome beyond imagining. He stumbled and slipped on the crawling foulness underfoot. Then, in that reeky twilight, he saw the pausing of Rough Tauntus, and below the demoniac bird he descried a sort of pool with a margin of mud that was marled with obscene offal, and in the pool a grayish, horrid mass that nearly choked it from rim to rim. Here, it seemed, was the ultimate source of all miscreation and abomination, for the gray mass quabbled and quivered and swelled perpetually, and from it, in manifold fission, were spawned the anatomies that crept away on every side through the grotto. There were some things like bodiless legs or arms that flailed in the slime, or heads that rolled, or floundering bellies with fish's fins, and all matter of things malformed and monstrous that grew in size as they departed from the neighborhood of Abhoth. And those that swam not swiftly ashore when they fell into the pool from Abhoth were devoured by mouths that gaped in the parent bulk. Ralibar Vuz was beyond thought, beyond horror in his weariness. Else he would have known intolerable shame, seeing that he had come to the bourne ordained for him by the archetypes as most fit and proper. A deadness near to death was upon his faculties, and he heard, as if remote and high above him, a voice that proclaimed to Abhoth the reason of his coming, and he did not know that the voice was his own. There was no sound in answer, but out of the lumpy mass there grew a member that stretched and lengthened towards Ralibar Vuz, where he stood waiting on the pool's margin. The member divided to a flat, webby hand, soft and slimy, which touched the hunter and went over his person slowly from foot to head. Having done this, it seemed that the thing had served its use, for it dropped quickly away from Abhoth and wriggled into the gloom like a serpent together with the other progeny. Still waiting, Ralibar Vuz felt in his brain a sensation as of speech heard without words or sound, and the import, rendered in human language, was somewhat as follows.
I, who am Abhoth, the coeval of the oldest gods, consider that the archetypes have shown a questionable taste in recommending you to me. After careful inspection, I fail to recognize you as one of my relatives or progeny. though I must admit that I was nearly deceived at first by certain biologic similarities. You are quite alien to my experience, and I do not care to endanger my digestion with untried articles of diet. Who you are, or whence you have come, I cannot surmise, nor can I thank the archetypes for troubling the profound and placid fertility of my existence with a problem so vexatious as the one that you offer. Get hence, I adjure you. There is a bleak and drear and dreadful limbo known as the outer world, of which I have heard dimly, and I think that it might prove a suitable objective for your journeying. I settle an urgent gush upon you. Go seek this outer world with all possible expedition.
Apparently, Ruff Tontis realized that it was beyond the physical powers of his charge to fulfill the seventh gesh without an interim of repose. He led the hunter to one of the numerous exits of the grotto inhabited by Abhoth, an exit giving on regions altogether unknown, opposite to the Cavern of the Archetypes. There, with significant gestures of his wings and beak, the bird indicated a sort of narrow alcove in the rock. The recess was dry and by no means uncomfortable as a sleeping place. Rollabar Vooz was glad to lay himself down, and a black tide of slumber rolled upon him with the closing of his eyelids. Ruff Tontis remained on guard before the alcove, discouraging with strokes of his bill the wandering progeny of Abhoth that tried to assail the sleeper. Since there was neither night nor day in that subterrene world, the term of oblivion enjoyed by Rollabar Vooz was hardly to be measured by the usual method of time-telling. He was aroused by the noise of vigorously flapping wings, and saw beside him the foul Ruff Tontis, holding in his beak an unsavory object whose anatomy was that of a fish rather than anything else. Where or how he had caught this creature during his constant vigil was a more than dubious matter, but Rollabar Vooz had fasted too long to be squeamish. He accepted and devoured the proffered breakfast without ceremony. After that, in conformity with the gesh laid upon him by Abhoth, he resumed his journey back to the outer earth. The route chosen by Ruff Tontis was presumably a shortcut. Anyhow, it was remote from the cloudy cave of the archetypes and the laboratories in which the serpent men pursued their arduous toils and toxicological researches. Also, the enchanted palace of Haon-Dor was omitted from the itinerary, but after long, tedious climbing through a region of desolate crags and over a sort of underground plateau, the traveler came once more to the verge of that far-stretching, bottomless chasm which was bridged only by the webs of the spider god Atlach-Nacha. For some time past, he had hurried his pace because of certain of the progeny of Abhoth, who had followed him from the start and had grown steadily bigger after the fashion of their kind, till they were now as large as young tigers or bears. However, when he approached the nearest bridge, he saw that a ponderous and sloth-like entity, preceding him, had already begun to cross it. The posteriors of this being were studded with unamiable eyes, and Ralabar Vuz was unsure for a little regarding its exact orientation. Not wishing to tread too closely upon the reverted talons of its heels, he waited till the monster had disappeared in the darkness, and by that time the spawn of Abhoth were hard upon him. Raftontis, with sharp, admonitory cawings, floated before him above the giant web, and he was impelled to a rash haste by the imminently slavering snouts of the dark abnormalities behind. Owing to such precipitancy, he failed to notice that the web had been weakened and some of its strands torn or stretched by the weight of the sloth-like monster. Coming in view of the chasm's opposite verge, he thought only of reaching it and redoubled his pace. But at this point the web gave way beneath him. He caught wildly at the broken, dangling strands, but could not arrest his fall. With several pieces of Atlak Naka's weaving clutched in his fingers, he was precipitated into that gulf which no one had ever voluntarily tried to plumb. This, unfortunately, was a contingency that had not been provided against by the terms of the Seventh Geshe.